What was your favorite part of the weekend?
Let's talk about you. This podcast should be more about you. This is your podcast.
Hello. I hope you're doing well.
You are listening to the Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour con Brian Bieber.
I've got Bieber fever.
Awkward subjects comfortably discussed.
Tell me what you think I thought I knew about ranching, or what, what I'm asking, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I just think that you thought that you knew what a cow was, and so that equaled you knowing about ranching. Like, I've seen a cow. I know what they look like. I know that they have babies. I get how human lives are created, so it's probably about the same.
Yeah.
And they live on a farm. I've seen those too. You know, like,
yeah.
I think you knew the logistics of it, so you assumed that it was pretty simple.
My friend Christy has been trying to get me to visit her family's cattle ranch for over a year. More than once, she's accused me of not knowing what a cow is, which is just ridiculous. Everyone knows what a cow is. But she was right about me not knowing much of anything about ranching or farming, which, as a person who was born and raised in South Dakota, I should probably know about at least a little bit. So early one Saturday morning in April, I drove with Christy to her family's cattle ranch, just outside of Miller, South Dakota. This was in the middle of calving season, when the cows and heifers are giving birth to their calves, sometimes with the help of ranchers like Christy's dad and her brother. By the way, did you know that cows and heifers are slightly different things? That's something I learned that weekend. Young female cows that haven't given birth to any calves yet are called heifers. Adult cows that have already given birth to at least one calf are just called cows. Also, a male cow that has been castrated is a steer, and one that hasn't is a bull. I didn't see much of either of those things. Theoretically, I was going there to help out a little, but really I just spent the weekend trying to stay out of the way while everyone who knew what they were doing, which is to say everyone except for me, did their thing. A few weeks after that weekend at the ranch, Christy and I sat down in her living room and talked about it for a while. Now, for the record, I have no idea how common any of this knowledge is, so if you already knew the difference between a cow and a heifer, or if you know what a head gate is, or if you've ever set foot on a pasture of any kind, then chances are you already know a lot of things that I just learned 2 months ago, and none of this stuff will be news to you. And you'll probably feel pretty smug listening to me talk about all of the dumb ideas I had about cattle ranching, and that's fine. I mean, it's kind of petty of you, but it's fine.
Well, I don't know that I thought it was... I think I actually thought it was a lot more complicated than it was. I assumed...
Really?
I assumed... I talked to you a little bit about this when we were there, but I assumed that it was a much more controlled situation.
Oh, sure.
And so I... And part of it may have been like the factory farm stories that you hear, where I didn't think that there were ranches like your family's ranch. Anymore, I thought that was a sort of a bygone thing. I was imagining a very very controlled setting where there every cow, if not having its own stall, was like I basically imagined. And I know this is insane now. When I think about it afterwards, I know that this is just a ridiculous thing. But I imagined for calving season, like, a big facility, maybe not even a barn, in my mind, like, where cows were...
more, like, manufactured.
Yeah, kind of. Like, where they were facing a wall, and, like, their hindquarters were pointed out, and it was just sort of like, oh, this one's ready, and then you'd pull the cow out, or you'd pull the calf out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to let on, especially in front of your dad, you know, that's what I thought. But so it was kind of a shock to me when we drove out into the pasture, and it was a pasture, and there was so much, there's so much square footage allotted to each animal, you know what I mean? Or the, the ratio of land to animal was so large, and I saw, like, oh, they're hanging out, and then when they have the calves, they have the calves, unless there's a problem. And I guess I didn't get that, and I don't think that it wasn't you not explaining it before. I think it was just me not understanding at all. Like, I don't think it just sunk in until I got there.
Yeah.
So it's equally stupid. The fix that you're, I was
equally... No, I mean, you know? I think that there was no way for you to know. I think that's why I wanted you to go. Because I could tell that you didn't really get it.
Yeah.
And I selfishly wanted you to understand.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone should.
It's not like I have some extremely cosmopolitan upbringing to blame for my ignorance of all things agricultural. I grew up in Sioux Falls, a small city that is much larger than Miller, but that in many ways resembles a suburb more than an actual city. There are lots of chain restaurants, there's a shopping mall, and a nearly non-existent public transportation system, and there are zero cows. Depending on how you look at it, I had the best or the worst of both worlds growing up. I was neither a city nor country mouse. So in retrospect, it makes a lot of sense that as teenagers, most of my friends and I were drawn to punk rock. We understandably bristled at being associated with the rural Midwest, because it wasn't something we could relate to. Had we been farm or ranch kids, we probably would have taken pride in it. But we didn't relate to much of anything around us, so we got bad haircuts and listened to abrasive music. The particular school of anti-authoritarianism to which my friends and I prescribed was almost comically conservative in a lot of ways. Most of us considered ourselves straight edge, meaning we abstained from alcohol, drugs, promiscuous sex, and meat products, making us a perpetually sober, earnest, and completely unself-aware gang of politically correct vegetarians who always stop short of rounding third base. Face piercings and ill-fitting clothing aside, we could just as easily have belonged to a church group as a punk rock scene. It's very cliche, especially among punk rockers, but it took almost no time at all for me to lose interest in straight edge when I moved away to college. I'd adopted that aesthetic and those politics primarily because it was the most socially acceptable thing to do in my social circle. It was easy enough not to drink or do drugs. I had no interest in that anyway. And not eating meat, it made sense. I read the pamphlets and the fanzines, and at 15, equating meat with cruelty was simple math for me. And also, yeah, everyone else was doing it. So when it came to being accepted by my peer group, it was much easier to be a vegetarian than not. Those are pretty shallow roots for personal activism, so it's no wonder that they didn't take hold.
I didn't want to get into it almost at all.
Really? I appreciate a lot that you have that background and that you were still open to going and doing this.
It made it difficult. It really messed with my head a little bit going there because, Kat, our friend, she talks about the first story like that people tell themselves, and that's the story of, like, what you expect to find, it's kind of the narrative that you create for yourself before experiencing something, and so you imagine what the experience is going to be like, and you form this idea in your head, like, this is what's going to happen, and then the second story is what actually happens, and I might be getting that wrong, but I feel like that's what I've taken away from Kat's conversation, and so for me, the first story was, I was going into the weekend at your family's ranch, bracing myself to be uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I was bracing myself to see things that I wasn't comfortable with and to try to understand them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was expecting the weird, the weird stalls with cows and somehow machinery was involved. Like,
really?
This is just like the image in my mind,
which is so not like that.
I know. I think, and this is just going to be embarrassing even to say out loud, it wasn't exactly like this, but I was imagining something like in the Matrix movies, where the people are plugged into plugged in to tubes and wires. And it's all very artificial. And so that's, which is, I know, that not. And
maybe it's your science thing. Like, you know how you love science, right?
But I don't know anything about it.
But, you know, like, maybe that's why.
And so, yeah, so it was, it seems weird to me that in, maybe in 2011, that there can be cows in a pasture. You know, and I don't, and it, maybe I do think that seems like a bygone era, and I didn't think that would exist. And so, but anyway, so I was expecting to go and see some things that I wasn't comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And I went.
I mean, I think you still did.
Well, that was just.
Just on a different spectrum.
That was more like queasiness. That was a different thing. I'm not comfortable seeing afterbirth ever, but I tried to, you know, I put on a brave face because I didn't want to,
No, you didn't.
I wanted to impress your dad. I didn't want your dad to.
You thought you were putting on a brave face.
Anyway, so I thought that I was going to go, and it was going to be more about, like, me kind of getting uncomfortable seeing some things.
Yeah.
And what happened was it was more that I went, and I was a little bit unnerved by how comfortable I was with it. You know, so I was expecting, I came back, and I had a couple friends say, oh, are you ever going to eat a steak again, or are you going to eat a hamburger again? And it's like, probably now more than ever. Like, I feel like I'm less likely to become a vegetarian again because of this experience.
But see, that's exactly what happens in my head.
Yeah. Is
I feel like if people knew it and understand it, they wouldn't make that choice. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe I realize there would still be a lot of people who would make that choice. But I think there would be a higher percentage of people who wouldn't. Because they understand it.
Yeah.
They understand that it's not what they think it is.
Because there were even, like, there were situations too, and honestly I think this speaks to your dad and to just the way that your family runs the ranch and, like, the kind of operation that they have going. Because there was one point, like, where I thought, this is going to make me uncomfortable. Like, when there's a certain point when we were out in the, what's it called, the Ranger? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
It's like a,
it's like a little ATV.
Yeah. I think of it as like a souped up golf cart. That's not what it is, but it's kind of the same thing.
In essence.
So we're in the Ranger with your dad, and he went to go check on a cow. And, or a calf. He went to go check on a calf. And he got out, and like, as he gets out of the thing, he takes this really ominous looking stick, like this and it's like this plastic kind of hooked,
like a cane.
Yeah, it's like a plastic cane, not hooked, like it's not sharp, but it's like this kind of cane looking thing. And he gets out of the Ranger, and he goes to look at his calf because it seemed like something might be wrong with the calf. And then the calf's mother kind of keeps barging in, and you kind of like whack at it, like at the cow with like on its, like, no, it was like the cow's nose to like to get it to go away. And I remember, like, the feeling as I was watching him kind of wind up, I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna see some animal cruelty. And this is gonna be uncomfortable,
right?
And then, but it was that thing, like, where I think if I would have stopped my thought process there, I could have, it would have been easy for me to be like, oh, that's awful. He's whacking this cow on the nose with this cane. But then I started looking at what I was seeing, and I saw a man who weighs, like, probably 170-pound man with a piece of plastic stick, like, swatting a 1,500-pound animal that could trample him to death.
Yes.
To get it away from, so that it wouldn't trample him.
Yeah.
So that he could see if its calf was had pneumonia, or it was checked if it was okay. And so it was this thing where I was like, that, and when I really watched what he was doing, I was like, that wouldn't probably hurt me if he was hitting me with that plastic cane, you know. And so that was a kind of a weird, it was kind of a weird moment for me, because I was all ready to get, to be sort of upset by that, and then it's like, oh, it's not so bad.
Yeah, it's like exposing what it actually is.
Yeah, and it's like starting to think about it. If it would have been different, I think, if he had a cattle prod and he was, like, shoving it in the cow. You know, but that's... But, yeah, I mean, and you're making a face, like, that's crazy.
Right.
But that's what... I mean, that's what the... When I was 17, I would have assumed that that's how it worked. Yeah. Because that's kind of...
It's like a, like the scare tactic. That this weird stigma that's attached to it. Like, that it's animal cruelty and... It's so not. I mean, yeah. I think my father has more respect for animals than nearly anyone else on the planet.
I'd like to talk a little bit about your dad. Because he seems like he's an interesting guy, I think. And I feel like you, before, and I know you're probably just bracing me for the experience of going to this to this ranch, but I was slightly terrified of your dad and your brother. Because I feel like you portrayed them as maybe much less accessible as people than they actually are. And,
really?
And, you know, well...
I don't know.
Maybe. It was probably me, too, because I... Well, I mean, I'm not going to put it on you anymore.
You can. It could have been me.
No, I'm going to backtrack a little bit because I saw a picture of your dad and your mom. And your dad... looks like the Marlboro Man. His photo, like, without the cigarette.
That's like, hilarious.
He's, like, this photo, like, you look at this photo of your dad, and you're like, well, this is a fucking cowboy. Like, he's like, this is exactly, like, this is someone who is what he does, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's a cowboy.
And that's...
Straight up. You would never hear me say that outside of this conversation, but...
Well...
He is.
But no, but you're... I think I was expecting, for one thing, and again, this is probably my own insecurities, but, like, I was expecting to be kind of dismissed or condescended to the whole time, you know?
Yeah,
but... I mean, which is, again, just my own... I mean, but to be honest, I kind of expect that from pretty much any situation that I enter into.
I think you maybe expected that because you didn't understand the situation.
Yeah, probably.
You know? Like... I don't know.
But I mean, because he's a quiet guy. Kind
of, yeah. You know what I mean? But, he's pretty stoic.
But also, but just clearly like a nice guy, and he didn't have to talk to me at all. That, you know, he didn't have to talk to me that weekend. He didn't have to offer information about the cow, or you know, like Nickel. He didn't have to talk to me about the horse and like how...
Yeah, but we're all from South Dakota. Come on, we talk to everybody.
A few days before we came to the ranch, one of the Lammer's horses, a big, nice gray guy named Nickel, injured himself on a fence, tearing a long, ugly gash along his flank. By the time we arrived, he had been stitched up and was recuperating in the barn. Over the weekend, we spent a lot of time with Nickel, running cold water over his side to keep his swelling down, making sure the wound was clean and uninfected, and bringing him hay and drinking water. Christy's dad, Ken, told me that even in situations like this, when a horse is recovering from an injury, he doesn't like to bring the food right to it. He makes the horse walk to the hay, even just across the barn, to work for it, even though it's just a little work. Too many people treat their horses like pets, he told me. They don't treat them like horses.
Like I said, I kind of went into the weekend expecting it to be, I think my first story for it was a sort of like fish out of water thing where mm-hmm. it was going to be a lot of funny situations that I found myself in, you know, like, oh, here's, I mean, I imagined, and maybe the biggest example of this was I imagined myself like pulling a calf out of a cow. And I kind of blame you because you put that in my
head. I did a little bit. Like you can said, blame me.
You know, you said, oh, you know, if
we'll try to make that happen.
Yeah, well, yeah. You should put on the glove and reach into a cow so you know what it feels like.
Right.
But the one time that we experienced that weekend where that needed to happen, it immediately became clear to me that's not the thing for me to do.
It was mid-April, so technically it was spring when we went to Lammer's ranch. But spring in South Dakota is just a word. 8 inches of snow had fallen on the ranch the day before we arrived, completely saturating the pastures. During the day, the temperature lingered just far enough above freezing that the ground was essentially a series of giant muddy sinkholes, which made every task laborious and frustrating and even more difficult than it would otherwise be. Most of the cows don't actually need much help when it comes to calving, especially the cows that have already given birth at least once or twice in their lives. Christy's brother Brady has a ranch adjacent to their parents, and most of his cattle are cows and first calf heifers, so they tend to do a pretty good job doing the whole calving thing on their own. The rancher's primary responsibility when it comes to the birthing process is to regularly patrol the pastures, usually in rangers, which are a kind of bigger, tougher version of golf carts, making sure that everything is going smoothly and that the birthing cows aren't in distress. If a cow has been in labor for too long without making significant progress, it often means that something might be wrong. The calf may be turned around inside its mother or have a leg bent or some other complication. These things can put both the cow and her calf in danger if they're not assisted. And these are the situations in which a rancher will bring the cow into a barn and pull the calf. Which is exactly what it sounds like. The rancher puts on a plastic glove that covers the arm to the shoulder, reaches in, and pulls the calf out of the cow. It's like a more proactive version of what an OBGYN does, I would assume. I don't have any kids. During the 2 days I was there, only one calf needed to be pulled. Christy and I went with Brady to check on a cow that had been in labor for a couple of hours. We found her in the pasture. The small black hoof poking out of her vagina hadn't made much progress over the past 2 hours, so Brady decided that, to be safe, the calf should be pulled. The weather had hit Brady's ranch even harder than his parents. The heavy, wet snow effectively turned his pastures to swampy fields of mud. Just walking in it was difficult. We were nearly ankle-deep in it with each step. Even the rangers, which, despite my golf cart comparison, are pretty heavy-duty little vehicles, couldn't make it through the worst of the mud. Christy and I took a ranger back to the gravel road bordering the pasture, while Brady guided the cow to the barn, trudging through the muck and the cold behind her on a four-wheeler. By the time we got to the barn, the cow was pretty agitated. Christy and I stood quietly against the wall to avoid upsetting her further. Brady led her to a headgate, a padded metal brace attached to a stall in the barn. It holds the cow in a relatively stationary position while the calf is being delivered. Once she was secured, he put on one of those sickeningly long plastic gloves, covering his sleeve to the shoulder. On our way to the ranch, Christy had suggested that if the opportunity presented itself, I should help pull a calf. I hesitantly agreed, because I thought that if it happened, it would make for a funny story. The scene as I imagined it was a gross-out, fish-out-of-water slapstick. In it, I was shoulder-deep in a cow, Christy laughing at the look of horror and disgust on my face as I groped around inside the cow's uterus, like I was looking for my glasses on the nightstand in the dark. The imaginary scene went on like that for quite a while, at least as long as the theme song from the Benny Hill Show, which is what I imagined the soundtrack to be. The farce was drawn with such broad strokes that in my mind's eye, it was even a cartoon cow, standing stock still but tail sticking straight up in the air, eyes wide in surprise, maybe even a question mark and an exclamation point dangling in the air above its head. A prop to bolster my calving gag. In my calving fantasy, we cut straight from my arm up inside the cow to a snapshot of me hugging the adorable newborn calf, laughing as it cranes its neck up to try and lick my face. I saw a photo kinda like that on Christy's Facebook page last year. This year it could be me in the photo. It was gonna go on my website. I planned to record all of Christy's laughing and all of my comically miserable groaning, and all of the mooing and the squishing, and I was going to play it on the podcast. As soon as the cow was stabilized in its headgate, though, I knew that I had no business getting near it, let alone trying to deliver its calf. She was standing relatively still in the stall, but still continued to moo irritably. She was in labor. What the hell had I been thinking? It was very quiet in the barn, which was no accident, of course. Part of Brady's job was to keep the cow as calm as possible. She had been in labor for 2 hours, and was probably already exhausted. There was no need to upset her further. Christy and I watched silently with our backs to the walls. Brady placed his left hand on the cow's haunches and slipped his right inside her to find the calf's hooves. It happened much more quickly than I would have guessed. When he had hold of the calf's front hooves, he wrapped them with a nylon cord at the end of a block and tackle rig attached to the barn wall. He cranked the rig a few times until the cord was taut, and then suddenly the calf was sliding out of the cow and lying motionless on the floor of the stall. I'd never seen anything being born before this, and at first I thought that the calf was dead. It was lying on its side, completely still, eyes half-lidded and rolled back, its black tongue dangling from its mouth. The mother cow was angry now, sensing her calf behind her but unable to get to it. Brady cleared the calf's nose and brushed his hand over its back and neck roughly. In the pasture, its mother would have done all of this with her tongue. It's how the calf knows to start breathing. Eventually, the calf did breathe. Brady slipped out of the stall and released the mother from her head gate so she could attend to her calf. We left the barn right away. She didn't want us there. I remembered the scene I had imagined, me mugging from my own mental camera, Benny Hill theme and all, and I thought to myself, I am such an asshole. The Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour logo was designed by Christy Corver. The Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour theme is made up of Tiny Lights by We All Have Hooks for Hands. You also heard music in this episode by Man Man, Hoover, and Tsunami. Man Man has a wonderful new album out that is called Life Fantastic, and you should definitely go out and buy it. Hoover and Tsunami broke up a long time ago, but you should keep an eye out for their records too. Thank you to Ken and Sue Lammers at Lammers Ranch for their gracious hospitality. Thank you to Brady Lammers for his good humor. Thank you to Christy Lammers for telling me over and over that I would somehow benefit from watching a 1,500-pound animal give birth. Turns out she was right. If you like the show, please leave a nice review in iTunes. And if you haven't yet already, you can subscribe to the show while you're there. You can also listen to and download episodes at ghostsandhorses.com, and you can email me directly at ghostsandhorses@gmail.com. I'm sure that in my account of Brady pulling that calf, I got some things wrong. Whatever mistakes I made in telling that story should be attributed to my misunderstanding of what I was seeing, and to my misunderstanding about what I was most likely told in very simple terms after the fact, more than once. Sometimes I don't retain things very well. Also, I'm sure that people who know about such things probably cringed at my misuse and just plain ignorance of ranching terminology throughout this episode, and for that I apologize. This has been the Ghosts and Horses Radio Hour. Thanks for listening.
We're at your brother's ranch, and right. He brings the cow into the, you know, he kind of corrals it. No, I don't know.
He put it in the chute, and it never used the term wrangle.
Okay. What does wrangle mean?
We don't use it. in this day and age.
Why is it? What does
I don't know.
Mean?
It's like lasso. You don't use the term lasso.
You don't use lasso?
No.
What? Well, what do they do in the rodeo if not lasso?
They only do that in children's books. No, I mean, it's like...
Wait a minute, though. I've seen pictures. I saw pictures of your family's house.
Yeah, we just don't call it that.
I'm
making fun.
What do you call it if not lasso?
Rope. You just rope a cow.
So that's the
rope word. A calf. Rope of whatever you need to rope.
When did lasso fall out of favor?
I don't know. But I just... I want you to sound like you know what's going on.